Panelists today, we have two special people. We know them well, but they are always special every time they're on this show. Catherine Monet, she's the Chief Executive Officer of the National Coalition of Homeless Veterans. And Ralph Cooper, he is the Community and Residential Veteran Services Coordinator, Cloudbreak Houston, LLC, and co-founder of the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. Today's discussion is going to center around national disasters, extreme weather, and veterans experiencing homelessness. I want to thank both of you for your service to begin with, but thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. Hello. So we're going to start it off with speaking to Catherine. How are you doing today? Hello, Catherine. We are.
What's wrong?
Yeah, so we are having a little technical difficulty, but we are. How about Ralph? How are you doing? Okay, Ralph.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Good to have you. And Catherine? Yeah, we were having some technical difficulty there. But Catherine? Yeah, Catherine, why don't you start us up with telling us about what's going on with the national disasters and extreme weather and veterans experiencing homelessness. I know Texas has been hit extremely hard. Here in Illinois, in Chicago, we look at the snow and we say it's business as usual, and we have to sort of kind of get through it. But this is unusual weather down in the southern states, and especially we look at global warming and those kinds of things now, so we don't know where all this is coming from, but a lot of suspicion around that. But despite that, we are in a reality, and it's what's it doing to the people who are on the ground.
Yeah, well, I think that there are some really big challenges that anyone faces during extreme weather, right? But not everyone really thinks about how those challenges impact someone experiencing homelessness. And so you think a lot about, you know, maybe you and I, right, if there's a hurricane coming or a tornado, right, you go and you stock up on bottled water and food and things to stay warm just in case. And, I mean, I think thing one is that costs money, right, that a person experiencing homelessness may not have. Thing two is that it's really hard to get to and from places when you're riding the bus or, you know, walking on foot. Thing three, you don't have anywhere to really keep any of those things, right? And thing four is even just access to information sometimes to know that an emergency coming or an emergency is coming can be a challenge. And that's just like preparation, right? During an emergency, I think sometimes conditions can be even worse when you think about how to get to an evacuation site. Knowing where that is, even I think the challenges truly abound, and so we wanted to kind of talk about that and unpack that right today.
Yeah. Oh, great, great! And then Ralph, what's been going with you as far as your experiences now, especially with I know you've been in this business, you know, as Catherine has been in for quite a while, way before COVID-19 and way before, you know, this ice storm that's sort of ravaging the country. But what are you seeing now? How are you perceiving things going on?
Well, you know, as you know, I am right here in Houston, Texas.
Yes, yes.
So I'm experiencing it firsthand through the fact that at my house we had a loss of power and for several hours. Nothing like the 2 and 3 days that my organization suffered on property, 500 units of housing without power, without water, men and women who were previously homeless having to deal with those issues. You know, prior to my moving to Houston, I was from Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
And I married a woman from Texas, and she came to Boston to live with me for 13 years.
Wow.
And so she was ready because in Boston, this is like the norm, right?
That's right. That's right. And,
but she was ready. She knew to wrap the pipes and put a bathtub full of water together and I filled up the tank of the car prior to. We had ample supply of bottled water. Right now we're under a boil water for the tap water.
That's for safety concerns, yeah, and that kind of thing, yeah. Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and then moved to Illinois, so somewhere I lost some brain cells. I don't know why I went across the country instead of going down to the islands. but that nor'easter is a terrible thing.
Right.
So, Catherine, tell me a little more. You know, what are you seeing, you know, from your perspective? How are you dealing with this whole issue? Because, you know, we're seeing more and more of these events now, you know, where the weather turns against us and people have to sort of survive in that kind of environment. So what are you seeing from the people who are in that, you know, either homeless, and then we also have a lot of people couch surfing, you know, from home to home, mm-hmm. you know, because they are trying to find way of getting out of that kind of environment.
So I think that there are a couple of things, right? And I think the biggest thing is that communities and local emergency planners really need to think about not only the needs of, you know, the people that they're normally thinking about, people who are housed, right? But think about the needs of people who are not housed or people who are in congregate settings. And, you know, I think that can look a lot of ways in different communities. So we've seen some communities, you know, if there's advance notice, they're out there doing outreach days in advance and giving everyone really clear information on how to evacuate, how to get assistance. You know, they're doing that in a multimedia form, whether they're out there in person, whether they're putting up flyers, whether they're trying to kind of work with organizations who have a rapport with the community, right, to make sure that folks know when they have a fair chance to get out and be safe. I think some communities have really taken it to the next level and have embedded people who are specialists on homelessness into their emergency planning departments and into the response team so that in the middle of a pandemic, if something happens, someone knows what to do, they're able to call, they're able to access resources and able to get people to help more quickly. But I think the last big thing to think about is that some communities, like in New Orleans, I think what we saw after the really big hurricanes is that they're looking at getting set up some predetermined safe spaces, right? So in the middle of a crisis, if a homeless veteran or homeless person says, hey, I don't want to evacuate, but then it gets really bad, like there are places where they can go to either find assistance or get transported to an evacuation point and really get the help. And I think Texas was a little bit different because it felt like, you know, this storm was something that kind of came out of nowhere and was, I think, a little bit harsher maybe than, you know, people thought it was, and the energy grid was, I think, the big issue there. But I think that there are some best practices that every community should think about implementing, and the onus shouldn't necessarily be on the vulnerable person who's already struggling with a million issues to figure it out themselves.
Yeah, you know, because one thing I want to ask both of you, and it just occurred to me, you know, we have all of this, these trillion-dollar bills going through now for stimulus money, you know, because people have been impacted, you know, in their regular way of life, right? Their jobs have, you know, either gone away or they are struggling financially. Are there any special provisions that are out there for homeless people and for, you know, veterans?
Yeah. Well, there's a big arena here, George Brown Arena, and this is open for everybody. If you need to be warm, you need to come in off the street. And Houston, you know, like I was telling you, our facility is 500 strong, and so it's men and women. So if you're going 2.5 days without power, without water, the temperature dips below single digits. Okay. And you've never, ever, ever experienced this before. There is no manual. There's no set of rules. Like in Boston, if a storm's coming, they can shoot out to us. Here's, you know, it's what we already know. Here's the do's and here's the don'ts.
Right.
There's no such thing as that in Houston because they have no way of knowing what to do or don't. So when pipes burst, when it gets so cold that you're suffering from hypothermia. I was just looking at the numbers. 69 people have lost their lives either through hypothermia, carbon monoxide. I don't know if I said that right, but you know what I'm talking
right.
about.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I do. And
fires, where they brought in inappropriate heating apparatus into the home. So these people, you know, perished. And you know what, really? I got to speak about this. I'm really upset with it. This is an independent grid. ERCOT, E-R-C-O-T, is the controlling factor. What was $30 per kilowatt hour is now going off upwards of $3,000.
You are kidding. A hundredfold increase.
These people are having a windfall at a human being's expense.
Wow.
It's criminal. And this is totally run by the state. This is the governor and his appointed boards and so forth. This is a state-run grid. Texas only. And we used to be the energy giant. We were the star of energy. They used to use us as an example.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's like a hundredfold increase in the price. From $30 to $3,000? I mean, I can't. Who's going to be able to afford that? I can't think of anyone.
One woman already said she got a $10,000 bill.
Wow. That's unconscionable in the middle of a crisis, you know. And one of the other things, too, is that, you know, we have a tendency to think if someone is homeless, you know, that they are otherwise okay, right? But we have people with disabilities. We have people who have medical conditions that need, you know, medications. People who have diabetes, who are in the street, high blood pressure, you know, strokes, right? And trying to get around in the snow and ice. If you're in a wheelchair and that ramp is iced, you know, how are you going to get anywhere?
Can't do it. So you end up staying where you are.
Right.
And so, yeah, and I just want to speak there. A Vietnam veteran. From Houston was on oxygen. The story was Miss Monet sent me that story actually because I hadn't seen it. And when the electricity went out, his oxygen tank could run through an electrical process.
Right.
When it went out, he made an attempt to get to his car, you know, run the motor and try to link up through the engine, a cigarette lighter.
Yeah,
you know, they have a plug there where you can plug in electrical stuff.
Wow.
And that's where they found him.
My goodness.
Trying, he realized he couldn't do it, tried to get out of the car, and his wife found him in the position, one leg coming out of the vehicle, dead. He is a hero. He's a man who served his nation. And these people are making money off of it.
That's disgraceful. That's disgraceful that, you know, a hero's life should end that way. You know, looking for the service, the first duty of the government is to protect the people. Number one. I mean, it's in the Constitution, and it's something that should be done. And, you know, I don't want to get into the geopolitics of everything, but, you know, people shouldn't be, I know, you know, we shouldn't be leaving this town when we're in the middle of a crisis, but I'll leave it right there. But you know, as far as, you know, the ideas surrounding not having adequate funding and the sad thing that I think the thing that really hits me like a knife is the idea that people have been in this situation for decades, right? So we have had homeless people who are living out in the cold, deal with this every year. But now it becomes more of an issue when we start affecting the main population of people. But people have had to suffer through this stuff constantly. If it weren't for heroes like the two of you, you know, Ralph and Catherine, we wouldn't even have, that. You know, a lot of those homeless veterans wouldn't have anywhere to turn. And so, you know, I think that this is something that, you know, everyone should be involved in, all of us, you know, trying to support the kinds of programs that you are pushing forward and the policies that you're pushing forward to try to make sure that these veterans and the homeless population are taken care of appropriately. So, what would the two of you say? How can I get involved? How can a general person who's in this audience get involved to help?
Go, Catherine.
So I think that there are a couple of things, right? And I think my first thing is look out for your neighbors, right? If you're in an urban area and you clearly see someone who's unsheltered, right? Like, they're human. They probably need help. Stop and ask them for help and see if you can look up, you know, your nearest shelter or your local outreach organization. There are some cities that have numbers you can call, and they'll, you know, send out blankets or send out someone to actually take them indoors if that's what they want to do. And so I think thing one is look out for your neighbors. I think thing two would be support your local nonprofits, right? I mean, they're all out there on the front lines, and I mean, COVID hasn't been easy on any of them, right? And I mean, if you have the means to and the privilege to have a house and some extra change, like, donate to them, because I think, you know, people are struggling. It is expensive to care for people, and I think what we're hearing a lot of from our partners and member organizations is that their food pantries are being depleted. You know, the supplies that they normally give out are being depleted, and they're looking to kind of refill that and get folks back on track. Mr. Cooper, what did I miss?
Well, you know, one of the things is that we know that the northern cities have homeless veterans.
Nice.
Right? They have snow, they have ice, but they do a real good job. You don't hear about scores of veterans dying on the street from hypothermia or whatever, because they have systems in place that you can call and get someone off the street and into some help. Now, Houston, right now, we're under an emergency situation, so FEMA is even involved. You can contact your local FEMA representative if in the Texas area where this thing is devastating. And we have to come up with some sort of a manual that says, you know, just because Texas doesn't know how to handle situations like this doesn't mean others don't know. Others know and can help them organize a communication manual or document that every household should have, because this is climate change. And Boston had a higher temperature than Houston yesterday. You hear me?
Yeah. That's amazing.
And so we need to have something that everybody can have. I expect that this is not going to be the last climate change event for Texas.
Yeah.
Or maybe Florida's next. We don't know. But if we're not prepared, then it's going to have the same result.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say that we need right away.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things you just hit on another topic I was just thinking about is that, you know, the Biden administration is now moving towards the green economy and, you know, green jobs, you know, for solar and wind and those kinds of things. And there was a mention that the solar power actually did, you know, adequate job. But the wind actually in Texas actually was able to stand up to the whole issue. as far as the percentage that it normally yields, it's about 6% of your energy production, from what I heard. But I'm wondering if that's an opportunity for people who are homeless to be trained for jobs, you know, in the green economy, because maybe there's a need for the Biden administration to look at the homelessness situation and to support groups like yours, right? And to support.
I think that's a fabulous idea, Colonel. And, you know, we would definitely support that, especially you've got people ready to go, previously homeless veterans. You know, as we found out, veterans are very adapt. I mean, we can adapt to circumstances. We can work hard. And so I agree with you, not only just for the entire homeless population, but especially for men and women who put their life on the line.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, is there anything that you, you know, that you would like to? I'm going to give each of you a turn because we have about 4 minutes to go or so. But what I wanted to do is for you to, you know, give me your synopsis of what do you think we should be doing now, you know, as a nation, you know, looking at homelessness in a general sense since we have a new administration that's moving forward. And Catherine, I'll start with you, and you can give me your view of what you think.
Well, we got 4 minutes for both of us. I could give you 10 minutes.
You probably give me 10 hours, I know.
So I think that there are a couple of things, right? And there are a lot of really great programs out there serving veterans facing homelessness. And I think to a degree, there needs to be a little more fine-tuning, right, to make sure that the programs are addressing the needs of folks who may have challenges accessing them or populations that are really overrepresented. When you look at some of the numbers and take a really deep dive, right? I mean, we've talked about how Black veterans are overrepresented. We've talked about how women are one of the fastest growing populations of homeless veterans. We've talked about how, you know, the population is generally older and they're aging and need special assistance. I don't think we've talked about this on the show, but transgender veterans is a really quickly growing population, and not all of the programs at VA are well-suited to meet their needs. And so I think a lot about how we can refine those programs to make them work better. We think a lot about affordable housing, right, and what a right to housing would actually look like. Like if, for example, someone was, you know, running into issues and they were just able to get a voucher, like if everyone who needed a voucher were able to get a voucher, and if we had the housing dollars to actually build affordable housing to scale to support that, I mean, I think garnering support for those two things would be incredibly wonderful. We think a lot about the role of employment, right, and how we combat employment discrimination against people who are exiting homelessness, or how we create more opportunities. Because there are a lot of companies who are out there saying, yeah, I want to hire veterans, but they want your, you know, newly transitioning veteran that's still got their top secret security clearance and is very interested in cybersecurity. And that's not the bulk of who we're serving, you know, in terms of the veterans who are exiting homelessness. And so I think we spend a lot of time also thinking about, you know, income, employment, and sustainable solutions so that people can not only get housed, but they can actually afford to stay in their housing.
Oh, excellent.
I want to piggyback, on the housing issue that Ms. Monet brought up. Every person in America needs to call their congressperson, their senator, and tell them that we need to support and increase low-income tax credit. That is the one most important housing, low-income housing tax credit is one of the building blocks for building affordable housing. I mean, right now we're talking about the crisis and getting food, shelter in, but down the road, we need to be able to build permanent housing so that people can move from transition into permanency. And home ownership, we cannot forget that. That veterans, right now, the banks want you. Mm-hmm. You're commodities. You got guaranteed money.
That's right. Well, thank you very much for your time. You know, we are so honored to have you as a partner, NCHV, you know, the National Coalition of Homeless Veterans. And what you do every day, we have to applaud very highly. And we are going to you know, have you back, of course, again and again, because this issue is not going away anytime soon. So thank you for your input, and I want the listening audience to stay with us. And thank you again, Ralph and Catherine, for a wonderful, wonderful show.